Hey everybody, welcome to Limitless Radio Cast, episode 10. Today we got a great show lined up for you. Stick with us, it's going to be a lot of fun. Hey everybody, welcome to the show. Today we're sitting down with our very own Chad Kuhn. He's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt under James Klingerman. He is the lead instructor and my coach at Team East Coast BJJ, and also the manager and runner of Team East Coast MMA. And he's also, this is our 10th show. So this is a very special show because we wanted to present this because Chad is the 10th person that was presented his black belt by James Klingerman. So that's why we did this. That's why we wanted to do it as our 10th show. Right, Chad?
Yes, sir.
How are you doing today, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's become a little chilly outside again. The weather seems to be going down today after, sunny days, but that's good. That's okay. No worries.
Yeah. More sunny days on the way.
Yes, that's right. Summertime's right around the corner. Yeah. So, hey man, let's get into your journey, your jiu-jitsu journey, or let me ask you this. What was it about jiu-jitsu that out of all the martial arts you've ever done in your life, it was the thing?
Man, probably just because you were tested, I think, when you train. You know, I came from a karate background in the 80s, which that's kind of all there was. You know, I didn't wrestle, but coming up through karate, you sparred a little bit, but obviously you couldn't go 100% because you're going to hurt, you know, you're not going to punch everybody. But, and I think with jiu-jitsu, as you've learned probably already, there is no end, you know, there's always something new to learn. And it just, I just got hooked quick.
And yeah, with my short journey in, for sure, it is definitely something that's addictive, and the challenging puzzle versus, any other martial arts, personally for myself too, just motions and not having contact and going through the moves and stuff. Yeah. I can definitely see that now being involved with jiu-jitsu for sure.
Along with that is the community that jiu-jitsu brings as well. I think that's very, I don't know if addictive is the word, but very comforting too. There's a lot of people and they're like-minded people doing the same thing. And that family atmosphere, I think, brought me in too.
Yeah. It seems like everyone in the jiu-jitsu community, they really care about each other in terms of your goal. They know what it's like. And I think that probably has a big bearing on it, that they know what you're going through, whether you just started or whether you've been in it for, 20 years and, they know what you've gone through. Then that would be a big thing for you too, right? In terms of talking to people in the community, like they know you and they know where you came from and stuff.
For sure. Yeah. And I think you get a lot of the same people in jiu-jitsu because of the humbleness that it brings, right? We always talk about the ego checks. Yeah. I think we're just all pretty chill, down to earth people because we're humbled every day on the mats. Like you're going to prove if you're, if you're having a good day, a bad day, whatever. I think we're just all very humble people for the most part.
Sure. And if not, it will humble you if you stick with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I've always, we've had guys over the years come in that have big egos and you get put in check pretty quick. So either you leave and don't like it, which doesn't happen very often, or you change how you are,
Sure. So when you started jiu-jitsu, and I know you took on coaching very, very quick in jiu-jitsu, right?
Yeah, it was pretty early. So I really didn't have much of a choice. So I started jiu-jitsu in 2004. Yeah, 2004 is when I started jiu-jitsu at East Coast. It was no gi once a week. And when I say no gi, I mean pretty much more MMA. Steve Hyman, the owner of the gym that is no longer with us, but he was very big in MMA, and you might come into a jiu-jitsu class and be doing wall drills off of a cage, like a cage scenario, or throw in elbows out of a clinch or something like that. So it was very in its infancy as far as jiu-jitsu. And then my coach at the time, along with Mr. Hyman, was Mike Broom. He also trained in Carrollton with Dave Miller, who you got to meet recently.
Yeah. A couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So I started training with Mike and Dave in Dave's basement in Carrollton. Kind of stopped going to East Coast for a little bit. I've still cross trained at both places, but I would drive to Dave's from Louisville to Carrollton 3 times a week. And he charged me $5 a class. And, you know, we learned, I started learning gi jujitsu.
Nice. Did you guys ever watch any video then? Was there any training from video at that time? Because I know.
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, Dave was big on videos. So Dave's background was, he was a wrestler. He didn't start jujitsu until he was like 44, 45 years old. But a lifelong wrestler, and he got his blue belt from Hoist Gracie. So Dave would drive from Carrollton to Cleveland, at the Craig Kramer jujitsu place, who was a Hoist black belt. And get his rank from there, and came from a couple other people over the years. But Dave was big on video. He would get the newest DVDs coming out, and he would give you copies. He's like, here, check this out. And it's like, I remember one of my first, I couldn't tell you how long I've been doing it, but Dave gave me an 18 disc DVD set of Pedro Carvalho. There's probably not many people know who Pedro Carvalho is, but it was an 18 disc set. I'm like, wow. What am I going to do with this?
No kidding.
I watched it all.
Yeah. Good. Good. So what was it like at Dave's? So I've heard this story before, but tell everybody what it's like. So Dave out of his house.
It got to be an awesome place. It was an awesome place. So the picture I try to paint for people when I first went, I called him. He had a website, but it was just like address and phone number, nothing fancy. And somebody made it for him. So I called him and I'm like, hey, I want to do jujitsu. I know Mike Broom. He's like, yeah, come on down Friday. I'm like, okay. So I drive to Carrollton. No cell service. You guys have been to Carrollton in the sticks. I got no cell service. I find Dave's house and there's a church and a cemetery. And I go around back, knock on the door, and this guy answers the door. It's older guy. I had no idea who he was, what he looked like. Right. You guys that know Dave is a little guy, very unassuming. He's like, yeah, I'll get dressed. Meet me in the basement. So at that point I'm thinking I'm going in a stranger's house. You know, my friends have been here, so I should be okay, but I'm going in a stranger's house with no cell service and nobody knows I'm here. So let's hope for the best.
And seeing Dave, for our listeners out there, that's never, you know, I can paint a picture of him because I just met him a few weeks ago. You would never know that he would be someone, that was a lifetime wrestler or anyone that trained in jujitsu, which is very common amongst the jujitsu community. Like there's a ton of people that you always say, wow, I would have no idea that person does this. And it's like, well, no, you don't know that until you get on a mat. But I love the story because the first time I heard it, I could just see you standing at this door as a younger person at a cemetery church in the sticks. And you're like, hi, and he says, come to my basement.
That's pretty much like, it.
This is written for a movie.
Yeah.
That's good stuff, man.
I remember getting my first gi, and you know, I came up in karate, so it's not like I never wore a gi, but, I got an Atama like double weave unbleached gi for you guys that I don't know would remember those either, but it was a heavy cardboard and unbleached. It kind of looked like a khaki color.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was the plainest gi. I wish I still had it. but it was the plainest, like most rough gi I've ever had.
You have all your belts, right?
I have all my belts, but blue. I don't know. I lost it in a move or I cannot find my blue belt.
All right. Cause everybody that's at the gym, for everybody out there, a lot of Chad's belts, he has so much mat time on each and every belt. They are extremely faded. It's very difficult to tell one belt to the next because of the amount of mat time that he has on him, which is awesome.
Yeah. And my white belt is pretty, I was a white belt for about 3.5 years. In autumn, my girlfriend actually wears my white belt. She started jujitsu with me not too long ago, pre-pandemic, but then we really picked up during the pandemic. So, she wanted to wear my original white belt, which is, you know, 17 years old now. So she wears that. My purple belt's pretty beat up and most of you guys have seen my brown belt. So it's pretty rough.
The brown belt is quite amazing. It's
it took me a while. I was embarrassed to have the way it looked for a while. Cause I was a brown belt for so long. Mm-hmm. And I actually bought a new one time, a brand new brown belt. And I wore it in class one time. And, he hasn't come in a long time just with work and family. Chuck Schoenfeld told me, he's like, what are you wearing? I'm like, I got a new brown belt. He's like, take it off, put your old one on. You deserve that rank, or you deserve it to look like that. You've put in your time. So ever since then, it just kind of, you know, made me think differently.
And it's true. I mean, you've taught me that over our friendship and our time together. And, you know, all the conversations that we have is that, you know, I tell people all the time, like, your coaching ability is huge because you teach us that you earned that. Like, you don't just hand these out. Stripes are not just handed out. Ranks are not just handed out. We put the time in on the mat. We've earned every sweat, tear, blood, bruise, cake making that we don't do because we're not baking cakes there.
We're not baking cakes.
But it's true, man. And it's true. That's what I think. I mean, personally for me, you know, I love your coaching ability. I love your philosophy on it. I think you do a great job. I want to see you do some seminars. So everybody out there that that's listening, or send this along to those who own gyms, and we're going to get our coach Chad Kuhn in to do some seminars on some great things. And he has a crap load of information in that head. That's always the wizard, as I like to put it.
Yeah. I mean, that was my plan pre-COVID. I wanted to start getting out and doing some seminars and, you know, kind of putting myself out there a little bit more and being confident in what I know I can do, you know? You know, I never competed much. I didn't win very much. But I like teaching and coaching a lot more. And, you know, maybe that's because I didn't win. I don't know. You know what I mean? No. Some, you have to figure out what your passion is. Sure. And coaching and teaching definitely is my passion.
And you know this, that just because, so some of the greatest competitors in the entire world try to turn into coaching in, or the greatest champions in the world try to go to coaching and they're terrible at coaching. They can't coach.
Yeah,
they know how to do it, but they can't. I mean, you look from every sport across the entire plethora, all your main sports, from football, baseball, basketball, you have guys who are unbelievable on the field and they've tried to transition that into coaching and they can't do it. And then you have guys who are very, very good at the sport itself, but they're not super, super stars, like, you know, top of the podium. And then they go into coaching and they're unbelievable because they know how to relate to people. They know how to use it. And that's what I see with you all the time, day in and day out, when we're at the gym, is that you know how to relate to us. You know how to get the best out of us. You know how to motivate us in a proper manner for jiu-jitsu and the jiu-jitsu community. And everyone in the jiu-jitsu community, you know, a ton of people that we all know, and they talk all highly about you and being in good hands with you. And those who have listened to our past shows, you know, can hear that out of each and every one of them. And if you haven't listened to our past shows, go out there and download one of our shows and listen to it. So, you know, it's important that you understand that, Chad. That's what you have. And I guarantee if anybody else was on here talking about this, they would be saying the same thing. And they'll probably say it after they listen to this and say, yeah, Terry's right. I'm always right.
Always right. Yeah. And I get that. I, back in the day, seminar junkie, when I was a purple belt, I was very fortunate to, you know, to be under the guidance of Steve Hyman, who we've mentioned many times. And he would send me to seminars. You know, it's, as a business, sometimes it's not very intuitive to bring a seminar to your gym, you know, to break even or spend money or whatever that is. So he would send me to seminars. He's like, hey, go do this seminar, come back and teach us what you learned. So, man, I was going to seminars like crazy. I would drive by myself to Columbus on a Wednesday night, drive back, you know. But doing that, I kind of started seeing what you're saying. Not everybody can teach a certain way or relate to people too. So me starting to teach at an early stage, I think did help me.
And it does. It builds knowledge. It builds confidence in order to do it. It puts you in a right perspective, what you want to, and you can actually begin to read people better to see what's going to work for them, or how can they be coached? How can I feed them information in order for them to succeed at this? Because you want everyone to succeed that walks through that door and puts a gi on and gets on that mat.
Yeah.
I know everybody there does. I mean, we all do. And I know you are the pillar of that. You are, you know, you are a professor, you're our coach. So it's extremely important for people to understand that. So you're, you know, I know you did a lot of traveling in terms of going to seminars and stuff like that. Did you take notes whenever you did that? Would you like study?
No, I kind of, you know, hindsight being what it is, I kind of wish I would have done a notebook. And, you know, wrote some things down, at that time, who knows if I would have even wrote it down correctly or made it make sense. But I would usually find a couple things throughout the seminar, because you've been to them now. Seminars get long, and as much as we like jujitsu, sometimes it gets it to be an overload. So it'd be a couple things that I would pick up. Like I'm going to remember that. I'm going to try that. So even now, that's what I try to do.
Pick out certain things and just do those.
Just try to concentrate on them. And it might not even be something crazy. You know, I think I've told you about it. One of Christian's seminars, it was that cross collar grip and turning your knuckles out to recover guard, you know, keeping your shoulder in front of your hand. And that has changed my guard recovery. So, and I learned that as a black belt.
Which is, I want to transition into that. So everyone understands this. And we kind of hit on this. You're never not learning jujitsu no matter where you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Fair statement.
Yeah. Probably the most true statement ever.
Okay. So it's always an evolving process no matter what. No one has the golden answer to ultimate jiu-jitsu.
Even, you know, high level guys you think don't, you, we've watched the Mendez brothers. Those guys look like a cheat code for some video game, but you know, but they're still
unbelievable what they do.
Relearning something they're doing, you know, currently, I'm sure, you know.
I mean, I think, you know, we look at, you know, Gordon, you know, and look at his jiu-jitsu and where he's come and how good he is at jiu-jitsu. I mean, we've talked about it a couple different times on our show. But I think he would even say, I'm still always learning something or something more. I don't think he would ever be like, I know everything. I know, you know, in social media and whatever. And that's because a lot of people come at him. But I don't know that you would ever meet a person in jiu-jitsu that would say, I know everything. It just doesn't seem logical to me. So, you know, that's great. So, you know, I know you did some, you know, you did karate and stuff when you were younger. What was it like when you walked into East Coast?
It was different. I didn't know what to expect. This was a couple East Coasts ago, you know, our first location.
Sure.
It was a lot.
Where was the first location?
Lake Cable Plaza, right by Jane's. You know where Jane's little restaurant is? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so I do. Yes. Yes. I know exactly.
Right next to the yellow karate sign is still up there. So it was up there. I didn't know what to expect. It was no gi. I wish I had a picture of my first class. I had athletic shorts, a t-shirt and wrestling shoes on. Looking back, I'm like, oh man, but it was crazy. There was a lot of big, strong wrestler dudes. There was this girl named, I think her name was Cody. She kicked the crap out of me, choked me. I'm like, and you know, I was really small too. Even I've never been a big guy. I'm tall, six foot, six one. I don't know what I am. Right now I probably weigh about 150. When I started jujitsu, I weighed 128 pounds, and a karate background. So I've never done anything on the ground, never wrestled. I didn't know what to expect, but, it kept me coming back. It kept me coming back. So it's a lot.
Just that addiction instantaneously, which is good. Especially when you don't experience anything like that.
Yeah. You're going to,
you know, like
you're
the
gonna,
grappling or the,
yeah, you're going to go one way or the other. It's either the best thing you've ever done or this isn't for me.
Sure. How many people were training then?
I would say 10 people was a big class.
Wow.
Yeah. I'd say 10 people was a big class. I remember, Mike Broom, who was my first, you know, real instructor. You know, I think Mike might've just got his blue belt when I started. And he'd probably been in it for 3 years when I started. But I don't even know where my train of thought was going there, but I lost it.
It's all right.
I remember him saying, like, when we'd have 10 people, he's like, how am I going to teach all these people? And now, you know,
I was going to ask you that. So now an average class of jiu-jitsu
30, I mean, average, you know, is 30 people.
That's twice a day.
Mondays and Wednesdays is twice a day. And, you know, every class is at least 30 people, I would say. Some of the daytime classes could be 20, 25, but evenings is packed, man. It's to see where it's come is crazy. I wish we could take you guys back to see where it started, you know?
That's why we have you.
Yeah.
Tell us all about
it. I know.
Tell us all about the the great stories of where it came from, the what's the craziest thing you ever seen in that time frame, that short time frame in terms of small classes, because I don't refer that to you being in jujitsu as a short time, because you've done this for 17 and actually 17 plus years, because I know you've seen it before that or terms, but, right. Where have you seen it? Like, what's the craziest thing you've seen over that period of time?
As far as like something, jiu-jitsu, like something like happened, like something happening.
Yeah.
I don't, I mean, back then it was, you know, we go, I feel we go pretty hard now and roll hard and all that stuff. Sure. But man, back then it was, I got heel hooked my first class. There was no like, hey, don't do this. Don't do this. Don't do this. And there was no, hey, Chad, if you feel something, you know, like I kind of give that preface to new people. I let people know. And I'm okay. You know, some gyms don't want white belts rolling very much. You have to be a one stripe or a two stripe. Some of the traditional Gracie places, you have to be a blue belt before you roll. I'm okay. You jumping in. I trust our guys. Depending on the person, I might pair them with certain people to get them a little more comfortable rolling.
Sure.
But back then, man, it was different. It was way, it didn't matter. West. I saw guys get, you know, busted open with an elbow, just freakily, you know, it was crazy.
Did you guys have to pull mats out when you went, or was there already mats down?
So there was
like old school wrestling.
No,
mats?
it was the same type of mats we have now.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how soon they got them. Like when Mr. Hyman opened that first East Coast for just karate, there was just carpet. He didn't even have mats. And then as he, you know, things got a little, business got a little better, he added mats. So when I got there, we had already had the tatami mats. And then, you know, as me and Mike Broom did a lot of more gi training at Dave Miller's, we tried to, you know, we started pushing Mr. Hyman, or I shouldn't say pushing, but talking to him to add a gi program. There was one point he just, we were going to shut down the grappling program. There was really nobody that could head it up. And Broom talked Mr. Hyman into letting me run the gi program, because Broom had some personal things going on, couldn't be in. So as a two stripe white belt, I was running the gi program.
Wow. So at a two stripe white belt, you took on a program to teach jujitsu. And, you know, for everybody out there to understand this, that's because there wasn't anybody around doing it, you know, and actually,
no,
if you're not in the jujitsu community, you wouldn't know this. That's how it was. You know, we've talked to a lot of prevalent people. We have a lot of friends, obviously, in the jujitsu community that have told us many, many stories. And Chad has a plethora of stories that, you know, a lot of guys learned a lot of stuff from DVDs, and that's how their game evolved out of, if they, and then they would travel to seminars or under other people. They would drive a long distance time to be trained. So that's a lot for you, Chad. I mean, really, that's what you were doing under a two stripe white belt, right?
Yeah. I started, you know, I think YouTube started getting real big in, you know, 06, 07, whatever. I think I got my blue belt in 07. So yeah, I just watched a lot of YouTube stuff. Dave would give me DVDs to watch, and I just picked simple stuff. It's like, all right, we're going to pass guard to the knee cut and work on some stuff from side control. Or, you know, if I didn't have an answer, I'd ask Dave, or just keep working on it. Talk to, you know, Broom would come back and we would do things and just keep bouncing things off of each other.
Mm-hmm. How has that evolved your coaching now, in terms of, I know you like to do sequences like A, B, C, and D, and we do this over periods of time, you know, weeks in and weeks out, you will add small little things for us to evolve our game into something.
Yeah. I don't think that'll ever change. You know, I've been teaching that way for this long. It's never going to change. I definitely teach in a chain or a sequence or whatever you want to call it, because one thing leads to another. And then we work counters off of that. And, you know, the what ifs, we always talk about the what if they do this.
Yeah.
And that could be a whole nother class for another day. But I definitely think teaching that way early on, and I got that from Mike Broom and Dave on how they taught, and Mr. Hyman, just teach in that chain and keep adding to it. So I think it definitely helped.
That's great. Yeah, for sure. Where do you want your jujitsu to go for others? Put you on the spot.
You mean like how to help others, or What do you mean?
What's your legacy in jiu-jitsu for your students? What do you want all your students, me, everyone else in the gym, to get out of jiu-jitsu from you?
I would just say how, again, for you guys that have listened to me talk on other podcasts or at the gym, I would just say keeping the East Coast atmosphere. It's not even jiu-jitsu. We're going to, you know, jiu-jitsu is going to come. You're going to learn stuff. You're going to get better. But not all places you go in, I feel, have that atmosphere, you know. A ton do. But there's something special about that East Coast atmosphere that I think can't be replaced, you know. And as long as we're keeping that together, getting people in the door, making them feel comfortable, I think we're doing good. And I think if I can pass that on, that's a win. Cause that's what, that's what I learned from Mr. Hyman on how you treat people, always surrounding yourself with better people. You know, people would say, "Hey, Steve, good job." And he's like, "It's not me, it's the people around me." So I think I've learned that from him. So
then that's going to put me into this question.
Yeah.
What's Mr. Hyman mean to you?
I don't, that's a whole nother episode. Yeah, I don't know. That's, yeah. I mean, I got his signature tattooed on my arm with the logo. So that sums it up right there. That's a tough question. I mean, he taught me a lot about martial arts and life and business, all that good stuff.
He's a huge impact on you.
Oh, yeah.
He's a huge role model for you. He's a huge impact for who you were and who you are today.
Mm-hmm.
I know he meant a lot to you, and I know he still does.
Oh, yeah.
To this very day. We all talk about him. There's plenty of things around our gym that puts that in perspective.
Yeah.
I know your coaching and the way that you talk probably came a lot from emulating from how he was to people.
Oh, yeah.
And how he acted with people. So I know a lot of people always wonder, you know, hey, Chad got this tattoo on him. And we have a lot of other teammates that have Mr. Hyman tattoos on them, both with our shield, with our team shield, and with his image of signature image there that you have on your forearm. And people have always asked, man, I wonder what he was like, or I wonder what kind of impact he has made on those guys to do that.
Yeah.
And that's why I asked that question.
And it's a tough question. And just you saying it, I start getting emotional.
I know you
do. So it's
important. Mm-hmm. It's
and that's real.
He gave
you
guys, right.
Go ahead.
He gave you guys something that no one else can do.
Yeah.
Outside of that world, outside of the martial arts world, and even being a human being, being a person, a caring person, and an understanding person, and someone that gives back to the community. You do this all the time, Chad. I know you're very passionate about making sure the community is involved with what you're doing, and they understand why you're doing what you are when you ask them in, for instance, a cancer seminar, which will be coming up here, you know, over the next several months, and, you know, it's going to be very big and whatnot. And so I want people to get an understanding of who Mr. Hyman is. And we're going to do an episode on the cancer awareness, everybody. So be prepared for that. We're going to be doing an episode where we're going to be bringing our local community people in that are going to be talking about what it means to them and what this means to Chad to continue this legacy on. Because I kind of look at Chad as this, and I think he knows this a little bit, but I'm just going to bring this out and say this. Like, I look at him, I don't know Mr. Hyman out of just stories. So I never got to meet this man, but I got to meet what he has left his legacy onto the people that I get to come in contact every single day. And I know that I'm surrounded by good people by that.
Yeah.
So that's why I ask. He means a lot to you. Clearly, he means a lot to you. And he's left an life impact on you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, if I've never personally heard anybody say anything bad about Mr. Hyman, like, hey, I don't like that guy. I guess that's kind of what I want to leave. You know, like, I want to be, how do I say this? Like, I don't even know how to say it. Like, Mr. Hyman, 5 minutes in a room with him and you felt like you were his best friend. So, and I feel like there's 300, 400, 1,000 people that if you asked them, who's your best friend? Steve Pine. We hung out all the time. Awesome. You know, we told story, whatever. Like that just, that dude made you feel good.
And you do that too. You know that. I know it's hard for you to admit that.
Yeah,
but you do.
I try. I mean, I do. I try.
There's not anybody I've ever talked to that knows you that said he's not a good coach or he's not a good person or anything like that. And I always think in my head instantaneously is that it came from, you know, your upbringing and being able to surround yourself with good people and knowing that that's what Mr. Hyman would want you to be and want you to do, you know, for the school in itself. It doesn't have to be just jujitsu. You know, for everybody else out there that doesn't know, you know, we have a lot of other stuff that goes on in Team East Coast. There's karate, there's a kids program. There's adults that are in karate. We have MMA Fit where they train with kettlebells and all kinds of stuff. We have yoga. We have kickboxing and jujitsu. And there's just, yeah, there's always a lot going on, and there's not a single person I've ever met in that place, no matter what they are doing, that hasn't had a huge same attitude as what Chad imprints on them as they walk through the door. So that's coming from Mr. Hyman, in my belief, without ever meeting the man personally. Would you agree with that? That's the imprint that Mr. Hyman left on you, and you are leaving that imprint on everybody else.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Awesome. And the other part I want to get into. So some of you guys know this story that James Klingerman presented Chad with his black belt, and he was the 10th person. So that's why we wanted to do this show as our 10th episode. What does James mean to you now that you've built that relationship with him over that time?
I mean, I've known James for a long time through jujitsu. And when we had the chance to, I guess, reaffiliate with somebody, the first name that came to my head was James Klingerman. I knew he was a good guy. You know, AJ, his wife is very involved. I feel they're a very family, I don't want to say owned gym, but the atmosphere, family atmosphere. And, you know, so it was a no-brainer for me. And just, you know, over the last few years, I think we've been affiliated with 3, 4, 5 years maybe now. James is always there when I need to, you know, ask him something. We exchange videos and talk, and he's a good dude. He's one of the best guys in jiu-jitsu that I've met.
And he is. I have met him. Obviously, everybody out there knows that we did an episode with him and we got to talk to him, and I got to train with him. He was my training partner with our Clark Gracie seminar this past Sunday. Mm-hmm. Which I couldn't have asked for a better training partner at that point in time. I got 2 seminars in one day.
Yeah.
which was awesome. And it gives me great memories to never, you know, forget that kind of stuff. But that's awesome. So James presented that, you know, his 10th black belt to you.
Yep.
And what does that black belt mean to you now? And then when it first happened,
I think when it happened, it was like, kind of like, finally, you know, I feel like, and I've said many times, like I'd still have that brown belt around my waist if I never would have got my black belt. You know, at some point it did feel like I was never going to get it, you know? So my confidence wasn't there a little bit, like, man, do I deserve this? And then when I got it from James, it just kind of brought everything back. Like, I do deserve this. And it kind of, I don't want to say made me like jujitsu again, because I never didn't like jujitsu. But it's what they say, black belt, it doesn't mean you've accomplished it all and learned it all. Now we're starting to really learn. And you kind of start over and look at things differently.
Is that what? So I've read this before, and getting a black belt, I've heard that many, many times, or I should say I read that many, many times now over my journey so far, that when someone, when a coach or an individual is promoted to black belt, there is that perspective, how you just explained it. That's a pretty true statement, right?
I feel it is. Yeah. Should be. I mean, if you're saying, you know, we talked about never learning everything. So if you get a black belt and you're like, I'm done, I learned it all, you're in it for the wrong thing, or just never, never realized, you know,
you should have never started.
Yeah. You should. Yeah. You haven't learned it all. Trust me.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a goal now with, you know, I know I've asked you about like your legacy and stuff like that, but is there any like small goals that you make, with having a black belt? Cause I know you make small goals as you're training, and what you're trying to do and evolve. But when I ask that, I say you're a black belt every single day you put that belt on. Is there something you say to yourself, hey, this is a goal of mine that I want to fit and be a part of? That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah. I mean, there's always a goal that you want to improve on. We've talked about it a lot lately in classes about small goals, you know. We all have big goals, I'm sure, you know. I've never been much of a competitor, so my goals are a little different in teaching. I always want to teach a little better, or, you know, get the details down a little better. Or in my personal rolling, you know, I told you guys I came in a couple weeks ago and my goal for the week was to not get my guard passed. Mm-hmm. And it worked until maybe Wednesday or Thursday. I rolled with Jay Stu and he caught me and he got passed. So just different small goals, I think are the key to jiu-jitsu.
Sure.
You know, it's not a lofty goal for a white belt or a two stripe, whatever white belt, to come in and say, hey, I'm going to tap the purple belt today. You know,
that's something I would never do.
Yeah. I mean, but, no, but
I would never have that mindset.
No, but you're,
I know this, yeah, what you're saying,
but you're older. You're not, correct. You know, I think you get some younger kids in that might be athletic or maybe wrestled and they were good at that. And you come into jiu-jitsu and you're not, it's not wrestling. It's jiu-jitsu, right? Obviously they can go hand in hand, and mm-hmm. a good wrestler can pick up on jiu-jitsu pretty quick. I've seen it happen a lot. But you're going to be the nail for a little bit too, because again, it's a different sport. So I think small goals are huge.
In jiu-jitsu.
In anything.
Yeah, that's, we can just say in anything that we're doing in life. So if we could give you any piece of advice, everybody out there, is that don't try to tackle everything at one time.
Yeah.
Try to do a little bit at a time and understand that it's going to be okay. Just keep grinding and keep pushing. I had a prime example. Chad is aware of this. I had a rough week in terms of my jiu-jitsu, and Monday we did something I've never done before, and I felt very lost,
yeah,
and very confused. And obviously my great coach that he is, you know, encouraged me and told me, hey, yo, just get the little goals and don't worry about that stuff and you don't suck.
Yeah. Well,
which I needed to hear.
Yeah. And I think sometimes, I think I said it Tuesday night after class, is, for lack of a better way of saying it, you should suck a little bit. You know what I mean?
I
don't know how else to say it. And that's me too. There's certain, you suck at certain things. You're going to get better, sure, at that. But,
right,
you know, Monday night we did those line drills where, hey, you're started with somebody mounted you, get out.
Correct.
That puts you, and it's not like you're mounted in a role, because it's different. You have 6 minutes in that role or whatever. Line drills are like you're mounted till you get out.
Yes.
So it can,
and it's very fast I will compare it to, I've never competed yet.
Yeah.
But after talking to all the guys and everything, because everyone there is awesome and really, you know, helped and picked me up and listened to me whine, as I put it, because I'm very hard on myself. It's real scenario. It's like a real life scenario. So to give everybody out there that doesn't do jiu-jitsu, you're putting a real life situation to where it's quick, fast. It can be dirty in terms of doing what you have to do because they're trying to survive and you're trying to survive. Yeah. And when you are at my level, you have a lot to learn, and I'm okay with that. And it's not that I ever had to not come to a realization of that. I've always known that every day I walk into that gym, my goal is to absorb as much knowledge that I possibly can, which I pick your brain all the time. Mm-hmm. Everybody in that gym, I really, really lean heavily on a lot of the higher rank belts and stuff like that. I think you've encouraged me to do that mm-hmm. over the year. That's your coaching style. Yeah. Like, hey, don't be afraid to ask people questions. Go to this person or this person. They're a little bit better here, and they're a little bit better here for certain things that I'm looking for. So that's always been important just to tell you that. And you know this, I've said this to you before, but that's a legacy that I think you're leaving behind.
Yeah.
You know, with your coaching ability and what you've done with East Coast Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah, I hope so. And, you know, back in the day, we talked about the old days a little bit. And when we started getting some guys that want to compete, my goal was to get the East Coast name out there. So we went to so many tournaments I would take guys to. And when we first started, like people started seeing me at tournaments, and I'd always have mm-hmm. an East Coast shirt on. People didn't even know my name. They call me East Coast, like, hey, East Coast, come over here. You know, and they talked, you know, I started meeting different coaches. You know, I met Dion that way and Dustin Ware mm-hmm. and, you know, just started supporting different events and getting our name out there. And, you know, I was always, and this came from Mr. Hyman. He's like, listen, you know, you're the head of this. We want to represent East Coast as a good name. We want people, because, you know, he did a lot of karate competitions back in the day. And people knew an East Coast guy because of the way they carried themselves back then. They didn't have any East Coast patches on their shirt, on their karate gis. They knew who they were, you know? So my big thing was keeping these guys under wraps, because I'm like, hey, we don't need you to make a scene. And now we have to go back and talk to Mr. Hyman, and we don't want that. It's not going to be pretty. Sure. So when he finds, you know, he built a name for his gym, and I was trying to carry that on, and I would have that conversation. You know me, I'm not a try to play a tough guy or a drill sergeant, no, but
not at all.
But if you disrespect the team and make a scene, we're going to have problems. So, you know, if you lose, shake their hand. We can go in the back and yell and scream and cry and whatever. I'm okay with that, but not in front of people.
Right.
So
keep your composure,
and
represent correctly.
Hey, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of emotions in this. Because we put it all out there like no other sport, I think, does. But win and lose with respect. It's still a martial art, you know. Be respectful to everyone, because, you know, yeah, you lost, but that guy won. He did everything right, right? I mean, so.
Which is a great point. And we just, you know, we talked, you know, a few weeks ago, we had our good friend R.E.K.
Yeah.
on the show. And he brought a very good point on, and you've been alliterating that to everybody in the gym, is that, look, this is you versus somebody else. It's a 50-50.
Yeah.
Someone wins as someone loses, but it takes his 50% to beat you, and it takes your 50% to beat him.
Yeah.
So don't think that they're not doing something because you lost.
Yeah. Or don't think you just are terrible because he won. He did something better than you did, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's huge.
And in the world of jiu-jitsu, out of every martial art and anything, you know, I've ever studied or been around or read, it is very true in terms of when I, you know, to go back to a little bit in the beginning of the show here, is that you are touching somebody physically more than you ever are in any other martial art, unless you're competing.
Yeah.
You know, this is every single day. I mean, for those don't know what jiu-jitsu is, go out and watch a video YouTube and just pull it up, and you'll see what we do all the time. Which still to this day, I get people all the time that go, why do you want to do that?
Yeah. Yeah. That is the question, right?
it's easy to explain. It's hard for people to understand that aren't involved.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've dealt with that, right? In your journey that you've been all these years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, family members, you know, I started jiu-jitsu when I was 29. So you know, not old, but not young either, you know, and especially not having the experience. And I grew up in martial arts, and family members or people I worked with, like, oh man, you're still getting after it at your age. I'm like, I'm not old, you know, and I still don't feel, you know, people, oh, what's it feel like to be 45? I'm like, I don't know what that means. What I don't, you know what I mean? Like,
sure. No, 100%, because I feel that way too.
Yeah.
You know, like some days I think, you, Terry, you don't have to do this.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing to prove anymore. And you've been in life and you have good friends around you and so on and so forth. But, I love it.
Yeah.
Man. I love the physicality, not just of jiu-jitsu, but I like other things.
Yeah.
And talking about it, obviously that's why we
yeah
started this
for sure
podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. With the,
talk about it all
and time. With the age thing, I think age has been looked at differently over the years too. I can, like when my dad was 45, I'm like, holy crap. You know what I mean? It just seemed,
right.
It seems so much different, and people take care of themselves better now. You know, I just,
and they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. The evolution of people realizing what they put in their body is important.
Yes.
And you're going to be able to get out of your body what you're putting in.
Yeah.
And everyone that trains in any type of anything, from just working out to running to jiu-jitsu to any martial art, you understand that. You begin to understand that, wow, I better watch what I'm doing here, because I'm not going to have good results. Or it, when you're older, you're going to be like, wow,
yeah,
I feel like I'm 80 and I'm only 40.
Yeah.
You know, and you and I both, we talk about it, and I feel great all the time. Yeah, I'm banged up and I'm bruised, but that's
going to be
on me.
Oh,
I mean, I kind of, yeah.
It's again, we're not baking cakes. It's a
exactly.
It's a contact sport. Things are going to hurt. You're going to be a little sore certain days more than others, or,
sure.
You know, I would, you know, we've talked about this recently too, like training smart. When you don't feel well or something really hurts, come in and drill and then watch everybody roll, hang out, talk. And, you know, I've done that a lot. I used to be the guy that had to be at class no matter when it was, even if I wasn't teaching, if it was an open mat on Sunday, if it was a holiday open mat that Pete wanted to open up for, it's like, I have to be here. But that's changed over the years. You know, that's changed for many reasons. I don't want to get hurt. You know, I have Autumn that I want to be with on those days when,
yeah.
When I, you know, before I was just like, I'm going to the gym. Now I have somebody that I want to be with and hang out with. And it's like, I'm not going to miss anything. The jiu-jitsu is going to be there on Monday when I get back, you know?
Right. Still going to be there.
So certain things have changed over the years in the way I see things. And I do want to say too, with the way the program has come along, and I don't think we'd be where I'm at as an instructor without Pete, our other black belt. Like, you know, you guys will get to get to hear from Pete. We'll drop it now that Pete will be episode number 11, because he was Klingerman's 11th black belt right after I was number 10. So Pete's been at East Coast for probably since 2007. And he was one of the first guys that I could really start. He started getting jiu-jitsu. He did wrestle. So I think that helped out. But, you know, when I would talk to certain people, I would tell them, hey, if you know I'm going to get my black belt from James, please make sure Pete gets his the same day I get mine. That was very important to me. He should have got his brown belt the same day I got my brown belt, but he didn't. And that's, you know, doesn't need discussed, but,
that's out of your control.
Yeah. It was out of my control at the time. But he's always been a, you know, I mean, you can't say enough about Pete. I mean, he's a loyal friend, a good dude, amazing at jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
So again, he's a very big part of our program.
Yes, he is. Yeah. He's in all that. And as Chad alluded to, we're going to have Pete on. So we're not going to give away all kinds of information about Pete, because we want him to dive into, you know, his whole journey and everything. But I second that. He has been a pillar in my life, both on the mat and off the mat, just having conversations and everything. That's encouraged me, and he now is my 7-year-old's jiu-jitsu coach, you know, once a week, and Logan being the other one. which are both great guys. And, but Pete being the other black belt in our gym. Yes. He's an inclusive pillar to everybody.
Yeah.
Along with you, Chad.
Yeah, no.
And you,
I think we're a good team, you know, in many ways, our jiu-jitsu is, I don't want to say polar opposite, but kind of, I'm a guard guy. He's a top player. Sure. Not that neither of us can't do the other, but, and I think we're both humble enough to be like, if somebody asks me something, I'll be like, let's go see how Pete hits it. He sets it up a little better than me. And I know he would do the same for me. Or, you know, we've talked about, hey, Jay Stu's got a good baseball choke. He's a blue belt. We're going to have him teach it because he hits it.
He hits it well,
you know? So like, I think we're very lucky to have the attitudes that we have that it's okay, you know, and bringing in different people to learn from. There's some gyms, it's like, no, you're going to learn from us. And that's how it is. You know, we don't bring people in, but that's just silly in my thoughts. And the other,
it's unfortunate. Yeah. It's like that.
Yeah. And I'm very lucky and thank goodness for Tiffany Heineman that owns the gym. You know, I do what I love every day and she trusts me to run the gym. And, you know, I took over, 6-8 months before Mr. Heineman passed, he kind of put me in that spot. And I remember going to South Carolina and learning the curriculum, like the karate stuff, and trained with him and lived with him for a week. And very fortunate to be able to do what I love for a living and realizing it's not always what you're getting paid. It's what you like, you know.
100% correct. Yeah. One of my biggest idols in my life, and this could be a whole nother show just for me.
Yeah.
My grandfather was a huge impact on me from this standpoint. He told me when I was young that if you wake up every single day and you're only going to work to be getting that money, then you're going for all the wrong reasons. Yeah. You should only ever be waking up to be happy doing what you're doing, no matter what you're making.
Yeah.
And I see that in you every single day.
Yeah. And it took me losing a job to realize that. I had a good job in logistics and warehousing and management, making good money and, you know, company cell phone. I ended up losing that job. And it was like, crap, what am I going to do? And it took me a little bit, you know, and about a week later, I'm like, job was horrible. I was miserable. I had people calling me 24/7 and, you know, why didn't this happen? Why, you know, it was constant stress, constant stress. So,
and sometimes it takes an event like that to happen in someone's life.
Yeah.
And to realize that it was good.
Yeah.
I mean, look, man, another door opened and you're doing something that you love, that you have a huge passion for still to this day.
Yeah.
It's never ran out and I don't think it's ever going to run out. No. I can see you being, you know, peeled off the mat as we're in our walkers and we're like, hey, I joke about that now all the time. I'm like, yep, I'm going to be walking off the mat on a walker.
Yeah. It's
guaranteed with my friends and my family.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and just, that's awesome. Yeah.
And it can't be done without supportive people in your life too. I can't say enough, you know, about Autumn with jiu-jitsu, and she started doing jiu-jitsu because it's my passion, not because she really wanted to, but she wanted to see why I loved it so much. I mean, that means a lot. And you know, she got a stripe on her white belt already and she loves it. And it's, you know, you get to,
which is good.
I should say love and hate it, because we all love and hate it. It's a frustrating thing to be like, man, I thought I had this down, but, so she's helped me see things different ways too, which is awesome.
It's like golf, everybody. It's one of the most frustrating sports for anybody out there that golfs. You hit a little ball and you think you got it and then you don't. And so I walk in the gym and I roll and I go, I got this. And then I'm in a Kimura and I go, what the heck just happened?
Yeah.
So that's just, it is what it is, man. Yeah. And that's part of the journey, mm-hmm. which has made it awesome. And you've made it awesome. You've made it awesome for me and a lot of other people, dude. Like, don't sell yourself short. Get out there. Like I said, you're going to get some seminars, man. We're getting past the pandemic. Yeah. Everything's getting good. So seminars are coming.
Let's do it.
Driving all over. Just going to be the hangout. I'll be like, hey, we're taking the podcast on the road.
Let's go. Yeah. We're going to drive.
So you've been in this game. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'll tell you about it.
Well, I was going to say, you know, you've been in this for a long time.
Yeah.
17 years.
Yep.
If there's one thing that you want to leave, I ask you legacy and all that, but just one statement you would say.
One statement? I would just say, and I've said this in class too, take every day as it is. With, you know, we don't like to get into pandemic talk because that's all we hear about. We want this to be something other than that. But with the pandemic, you can see how easily something can be taken away from you, right? Like no jujitsu, we're not rolling. We can't, it's shut down. So every day you're at class, take it. Like, I don't want to say be corny and say, take it. That's your last day, but take it for what it is. We're all here doing something we want to do with people that we love. In yes. an art that we love or we're growing to love.
Yes.
And that turns into training smart. You know, we want to be able to do this every day. So if you need a day off, take a day off. But the days you get to go in and train, listen to what whoever your instructor is, drill, and just take it for what it is.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. That's exactly what everyone out there needs to hear. And that's what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Because it's important.
Yeah, very.
What were you going to say earlier? You remember?
Oh, it was a way off topic, but Autumn and I watched the Netflix documentary last night. It's called The Last Blockbuster.
Oh, yeah. So is it in Oregon?
Yeah,
right?
It's in Bend, Oregon. Check it out if you get a chance.
Okay.
So now we're thinking like, let's drive out there. Cause neither of us like to fly. But
it's a long drive, man. Yeah, from Ohio.
One day plus nine hours. Plus 9 hours. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's a straight shot. I'll say that, but, yeah, I don't know how we'd make that happen, but it would be pretty awesome. It made us realize how growing up in the 90s and how much that like little video store was a part of your weekly ritual.
For us, like you and I mean, we grew up with Blockbuster. That's what
absolutely.
It was. Like that's if you were getting a video and then, you know, eventually they came out with video games,
yeah.
you know, which we all were like, what?
Yeah.
You can rent a game?
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a really cool, really cool documentary.
That's awesome. I'll have to check it out for sure. Yeah. I'm always looking for good stuff. And I love documentaries.
Yeah. It was really cool on how the video rental business got started. So I didn't know that side of it either.
Oh yeah.
Talk okay. a little bit about it.
Good. So awesome, yeah. man. Cool.
So,
all right, man. Awesome. So go back to the beginning. We're going to wrap everything up here. You have a ton of connections, a ton of people, a ton of representatives that you wear.
Yeah.
How can everyone tell everyone where they can follow you on social media? And anyone else you want to mention?
So on, you know, my personal Facebook is Chad Kuhn. We have the gym page, Team East Coast Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and East Coast Martial Arts, both on Facebook. Instagram, I run both the social medias. I don't have my own Instagram, but @Team East Coast_BJJ and @Team_ECMA is our other Instagram. So yeah, just posting pictures. You know, I wear a lot of lanky fight gear stuff. You guys know that I'm a lanky guy. Great gear, great guy that runs it. It's just a single guy, single dude that runs a business, him and his wife. Wear Strychnine stuff here and there. And then just team gear. You know, I kind of refocused where back in the day I'd be like, oh, I got to wear all this tap out stuff and, you know, the newest whatever. But, you know, at the end of the day, I want to represent East Coast. You know, obviously I do,
right on.
I do with a couple tattoos. It's on me. It's in me. But I want to know people, you know, if you're walking around somewhere in the summer and they see Team East Coast Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, like, what is that? Let me Google it. So I'd rather honestly, anymore, I'd rather wear a lot of team gear versus getting the hippest, coolest, newest gear.
Right on.
So
cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Man.
So
good stuff.
Yeah.
Good show.
Thanks.
Yeah, it was good.
Felt good. just to get it out and talk a little bit.
That's right. And we got plenty more. And Chad mentioned lanky. So just to give you guys a little
teaser,
pre-teaser, it's a show you're not going to want to miss. We're bringing John Robinson on. You hear the show in a few weeks.
Yep. Owner, founder of Lanky Fight Gear. So another guy I've talked to over the years. I've never met him. I've never talked on the phone or anything with him, just email and Facebook, but such a good dude. Like I said, good gear, good people, and check it out. It should be cool.
It'll be great. Yeah. It'll be good. All right, my brother.
All right.
Appreciate you very much, man. Thanks for everything you've done for me.
Yeah.
Thanks for teaming up and doing this show together.
Yeah. Hey, we started it. I kind of whined about it and you made it happen. So I'm sure it was during last year sometime. Something comes to the door, Amazon. I'm like, what do we order? And I open it up and I have headphones, a microphone, and I'm like, oh, I guess we're starting the podcast. So
just doing it. And now we're in, we're 10 shows in and we're not looking back, folks.
Yeah.
We need all you guys, everyone who likes our episodes on social media, go out there and download an episode and listen to it.
Yeah, I will.
I will say,
if you want to do something, just do it. I mean, that's what I've learned over the last year.
Yeah,
just definitely. Do it. You know, I used to like him and Hall about like, I don't want to put any videos out there because what if somebody says something about them? You know what? Who cares? Somebody might say something about them, but, you know, I don't know what, if it was my birthday last year, Terry got me that little book with the East Coast logo and it says, what's your legacy? So that kind of made me think, you know, about jujitsu and life. And I actually got those similar books for my kids recently.
Awesome.
And I put their name on it with a picture of whatever they, you know, one of my kids is big into anime and I got like a carrot and it says, you know, their name, what's your legacy? So something for them to think about.
It's important.
At 17, I'm sure it doesn't mean much, but
sure. But eventually, it'll imprint on them.
Yeah,
it's a seed, as I like to say.
Right.
You plant that small little seed in there, and that's what I wanted to do with that book. Because when I met you, I knew and I could see that in you.
Yeah,
and I knew that you have a lot to offer. Every single day, I'm around you all the time, and I know you have a ton of offer. You're a great person. You're a great friend. You're one of my best friends that I have.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, we've hit it off well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have great conversations. We're close in age and everything. We can always have a ton to talk about, from movies to stupid stuff to funny stuff. It doesn't really matter. It's like one of those people you just come across and it's like, hey man, this just happens. It's great.
Well, I think in the martial arts, something that Autumn has asked me a couple times, how do you have so many good friends? And I think it's jujitsu, it's martial arts. We're like-minded, we're humble, the ego is gone.
Sure.
And you know, I don't have many friends that don't train, you know, just kind of,
exactly.
Kind of what we do. And you know, we get into that and it's like-mindedness, I think, you know.
And it's something you bring to the table. Like, you know, we've mentioned a few times in this show is that, you know, one of the things that you like to do is tell people to circle themselves with good people.
Yeah.
I know you teach your boys that.
Try to, yeah.
I teach my kids that, like, hey, always make sure you're circling yourself. And this is the best way I like to put this, and Chad has heard me say this before, is that there are people that sit at your table. All right. I'm not trying to discontinue people, but honestly, there are people that do not sit at your table because there are certain reasons they don't sit at your table,
yep.
But there are reasons that other people sit at your table, and you have people who challenge you that sit at that table, but people who care about you and they keep you humble and they keep you level-headed and all that good stuff. And then there's people who love you at that table. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that Chad's talking about. You know, he's someone that's at my table, became at my table very quickly. Because I just knew who he was and it was someone that I needed to be in my life. So that was a huge impact. So yeah, it's been great. It's been a good ride and it's going to be even better to keep going.
Yeah.
Man. I'm going to keep doing
very fortunate to be the people we're around, like you said, and I don't even know what number to throw out there. 10, 20 people. If I needed something, I know I could call or shoot a text to, and they're like, what do you need? Where are we going? You know, no questions, yep. Type thing.
Yeah.
What do we, let's go. Man.
Always.
So that's very fortunate. And, you know, for people not in martial arts, if they listen to this, get in martial arts, get involved in something, you know,
if you have kids, get them involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
Instill that attitude and that gratitude and that mindset into your family, your kids, your lifestyle, because it will change.
Yeah.
Who you are, how you interact with people. And you'll see it if you do it.
Yeah.
You'll see it. And if you haven't and you're local, come in to Team East Coast.
Come on in. You heard it from me. If you come in and mention the podcast, you get a free week. Let's go.
There you go. Let's do it. Check it out. All right, everybody. We're going to wrap it up. Appreciate all you guys out there. Remember, go out and listen to us. Check us out. Like us on all social media platforms. You can find us on Limitless Radiocast on Facebook. You can find us on Limitless_Radiocast on Instagram. All our shows are on everything. We're on every major platform, Spotify, Apple, Podcast Chaser, you name it. We're on it. Amazon. We're there.
Yep.
We got it all.
Download it. Leave a review.
That's right. Leave a review. And hey, I'm going to throw this out there. If anyone out there is listening and you guys feel impelled, you know, just driven to sponsor us or to help us out with the show, hey man, hit us up.
Absolutely.
DM us, contact us. We can mention you guys on the show. We're looking for all kinds of new avenues and opportunities to get stuff out there. Talk about your products, talk about, you know, what we do and what we can do with those products and how people can use them. So hit us up, man. We appreciate all you guys. Thanks for everything that you guys have done for us. Appreciate you, Chad. Yeah. Another great show in the books, brother. All right, my man.
All right.
Cool.
Cool.
I'll see you, brother. Take it easy, all everybody. Right. Take it easy out there.